Required listening with Amazon Music.
Dad music again?
The greatest guitarist of all time.
Wait, who?
Alexa, add this song to a new playlist.
Sure, what's the new playlist name?
Jack's Intro to Classic Rock.
Adding Stepping Stone by Jimi Hendrix to Jack's Intro to Classic Rock playlist.
Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you and soon he will love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically. Cancel anytime.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm delighted that you're with us today, and we have with us also Mike Lawing in North Carolina. Good morning, Mike. Oh, you know what? Mike's microphone sometimes gets turned off, and it did again today. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Joyce. I hope you are. And it's a beautiful, beautiful time to be talking about our subject that we're going to talk about today. You know, nothing can be more frustrating for a patient than to feel that they're powerless in the medical system. And of course, that's something that Powerful Patient strives to achieve, to provide information to them. And I think our guest is going to have some good insights for many people today.
Yes, I've been interested recently in the Society for Participatory Medicine, and I've been participating in their online discussion group. And there's fascinating stuff floating around, and including, in particular, one marvelous posting from Dr. Joshua Seidman. So we invited him to join us today for this conversation. So welcome, Dr. Seidman.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great. So you had some fascinating things on your resume, one of which is that you're the immediate past president now of the Society for Participatory Medicine, and one is that you used to work as the director of meaningful use at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, and I understand you're currently now with Avalere Health as their vice president. Is that right?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
So tell us, what is meaningful use, and how is this going to benefit patients?
So meaningful use is a concept that came out of the HITECH Act. That was part of the stimulus bill, or the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And what happened there was an idea that not only should we try to stimulate the adoption of electronic health records, but that we should also be making sure that providers aren't just doing the same bad processes faster, that providers are actually making meaningful use of these electronic health records in order to improve the safety, the efficiency, and the quality of care that's provided to Americans. The idea then sort of took on a question of how do you actually define this concept of meaningful use, and that was actually a very open, transparent process. This actually started before I was involved from inside the federal government. I was outside in a private nonprofit group at that time, and the argument that many of us were making was meaningful use should not just be make sure that information is useful to providers. Meaningful use should also ensure that patients and families have access to meaningful and useful information. And so of the five health outcome priorities in meaningful use, one was specifically around patient and family engagement.
Interesting. So making sure that patients have access to this information, part of it is that if I see that the doctor thinks I'm on these 15 medications and I'm really only on three, that I should get that feedback to him and straighten out the record so that we're on the same page, so to speak. Am I on the right path, or what else is there in this?
Sure. I mean, that's certainly part of the goal of what we're trying to do in creating this sort of continuous transfer of meaningful and useful information. Meaningful use actually started off with a kind of an on-ramp, and the idea was that you need to start off providers with certain level, and so it's called stage one meaningful use, and we're now sort of in the early part of stage two, and there's a planned stage three. But in stage one, meaningful use, just to give some concrete examples, the idea was that EHRs, electronic health records, should be used to do things like generate patient reminders around preventive and follow-up care, to generate after-visit summaries. So each time someone comes into the office, we know that from research that 40 to 80% of everything that a doctor thinks that he or she communicates in the office is not remembered by the time the patient gets home. And,
right.
And actually about 50% of that actually turns out to be incorrect in terms of how they recall it. Because
when
there's so much information that floats between clinician and patient, and it's very hard to keep track of. And so the idea is an after-visit summary helps to summarize what happened during that visit. Another thing is patient-specific education resources, so that if you, for example, got a new diagnosis, that you would be prescribed information that gives you information to understand what that new diagnosis is, or the same could be true for management of a chronic condition or whatever else it may be. So those things, patient reminders, after-visit summaries, patient-specific education resources are good examples of how meaningful use of information can be useful for patient and family engagement. And then there are additional expectations for stage two meaningful use. So, there is a greater expectation around how providers engage patients in the use of information.
That's interesting. One of the things that popped into my mind as you were speaking is I've been working recently with a family that only speaks Spanish. And I went down with them to pick up their medication from the hospital, and they handed me all the prescription bottles with all the labels on it in English. And I said, could you please generate those labels in Spanish for me? And, you know, this is not an insuperable computer problem, right? You should be able to say, computer, spit it out in Spanish. Take one pill twice a day. I mean, how many different permutations of those instructions do you really need in order to cover the most of the prescription bottles that are handed out? And they said, oh, I'm sorry, we're not prepared to do that. And I thought, what a stupid computer program if it doesn't know how to speak Spanish. I mean, if I said Chinese, maybe that would be more of a hurdle. But you'd think that the most common foreign languages would be available at the flip of a little switch.
Yeah, and in fact, in some delivery systems, I have actually seen this to be practiced for several years now. I remember shadowing some clinicians and patients at Kaiser Permanente. This was more than 5 years ago, and they were already providing after-visit summaries, patient instructions in both English and Spanish, depending on the primary language spoken of that patient and their family at home. So it's something that absolutely can be done. The expectations around meaningful use are evolving to support that. At this point, that requirement is not part of meaningful use, but it's a direction that they're hoping to go. Stage two meaningful use added some additional expectations. So, for example, that patients should be able to view, download, or transmit their own information from the EHR that the provider has, and that they should be able to send secure email to their clinicians and get information back from them that way. So the meaningful use stage two requirements not only require that providers provide this access to that information, there is actually an expectation of a certain amount of that actually being done, that in order to qualify mm-hmm. for these incentives and actually also to avoid penalties for not being a meaningful user of EHRs in the future, that providers need to ensure that patients are actually using these technologies at some level.
Right, and of course not everybody is computer literate, but certainly the people who are need to have access to this information, and increasingly people are using their smartphones to do this kind of thing. To what extent does this help you if, for example, you're trying to get a second opinion and you need to send the x-ray, the radiology report that goes with your CT and all these kinds of things to the second doctor to get his opinion about it. Are there provisions that would support that?
Absolutely. And in fact, the idea that I just mentioned around view, download, or transmitting the information, the idea is that if you have information, say that you're, you know, from your doctor's diagnosis or from lab tests that have been done or other diagnostics, that those things are in the electronic health record, the EHR, and the patient, any patient that goes to a provider that has attested to stage 2 meaningful use can either view that information, that is, go online and take a look at it. They can download it, which means that they can then have it and bring it with them or whatever, or that they can actually transmit it, that they can directly go online and transmit it to a third party, like a specialist or other provider of their choosing, that they want to be able to see that information, or perhaps just to, you know, be able to transmit it to a family member that might help them interpret it if they need some assistance. So there are different things that you can do once you have that capacity to get that information in a usable form.
So let's just talk for a minute about electronic health records in general, because I know there are a lot of people who, well, let's face it, most people are allergic to change. So, you know, this kind of a change, some of the older doctors in particular are resisting making the change. I know a couple who said, oh, I retired, I just couldn't deal with that stupid computer. But I'm now going to a doctor who is young and very much with the program, and I see him using it to enormous advantage, not only for him but also for me, that he can access the information very easily, and he puts it in so that he has it available next time, and so do I. So how can we help people understand the benefits to themselves, the doctors as well as the patients, of electronic health records? How big a problem is it in just kind of selling the concept?
Well, and that is certainly why, they didn't just create the criteria. They actually created a pretty significant set of incentives, and these incentives were originally carrots. They were, basically providing some additional payments to providers that made the investments, and not just the investments in the technology, but to be fair, you know, investments in actually changing practice, because as you said, it is a change, and that requires a different kind of investment of time and energy and changing your own approach to clinical workflows. So those incentives were for providers that treated Medicare and or Medicaid patients. And those incentives at the beginning turned from carrots to sticks. So beginning in 2015 for providers that treat Medicare patients, if they are not meaningful users, they will begin to experience a small penalty in terms of a slightly reduced reimbursement for their Medicare patients if they are not meaningful users of EHRs. So that was certainly, you know, again, both a kind of a carrot and a stick approach to doing that. In addition, part of the HITECH Act that I mentioned also provided a set of resources to organizations all around the country to support providers in every state in the adoption and meaningful use of EHRs through health IT, health information technology regional extension centers. This was kind of modeled after the old agricultural extension centers. And the idea is to provide sort of boots-on-the-ground support to providers that are trying to make these changes. And it was actually targeted at the providers that it was assumed would have the biggest challenges in making these transitions, those that are in small practices, those that are serving safety net populations or in rural areas, critical access hospitals. All of those providers were eligible for this support from these 62 regional extension centers throughout the country.
Thank you very much.
Now, So these acts that are kicking in 2015 have a minor penalty, and it's turned into a stick approach instead of the carrot approach. And How many facilities now are doing it for just the Medicare, Medicaid people that should be doing it? Do you have a percentage of those who are actively engaged in already doing this?
Yeah, so basically there are about 90% of hospitals and about two-thirds of eligible professionals, which are mostly physicians, some other professionals are eligible as well, have attested to stage one meaningful use, or have received these incentive dollars for stage one. And what that means is that they have done that sort of first level. Most of them, it depends on when you started the program, most of those are now beginning to make the transition to stage two, and so they're beginning that process as well.
Josh, Medicare, Medicaid,
Mike, your phone is breaking up here for a second, so
okay.
I don't know if you can strengthen it somehow.
Yeah, let's see what is that.
It's still pretty garbled, so let me carry the conversation here for a minute while you see if there's something you can do. One of the things I was interested in pursuing with you is in the concept of meaningful use, you said the information should be sent to the patient. What other things are happening to try to motivate the patient to take advantage of these kinds of new capabilities that they're just discovering because they're just now becoming available?
Yeah, so absolutely there is a need to make sure that patients sort of see value from this. And one of the ways that we know that they'll see value is if they feel like it's something that's part of their care delivery process. And one of the things I mentioned is that in stage two meaningful use, there is not only this expectation that this access is granted, there's also an expectation that providers actually do something to engage their patients in using the technology. Providers, it's a very small threshold at the beginning, but at the beginning, it's expected that at least 5% of your patients are actually using that view, download, and transmit technology, and that secure email or secure messaging technology. So it's a small threshold at the beginning because we recognize that providers are practicing with all different kinds of populations and they may have different
right.
levels of engagement and needs, but that it shouldn't just be something that you kind of turn on a switch and say, okay, it's available, but actually providers are accountable for their patients' use of it. And what that has done is it has provided the incentive for providers to do a lot around encouraging their patients to use it, helping them with, how to log in. And it turns out that, in many cases, that once you provide just a little bit of support in how to use this technology, many patients find it incredibly valuble. And there was even some data just published yesterday about how valuable they find that.
That's great. Mike, how are we doing?
Well, let's see if this is better. If I'm breaking
yes,
up,
much
just
better.
Interrupt me, Joyce. Okay.
You're doing great. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. So, Josh, this is primarily directed at senior citizens and those on Medicare, Medicaid, and not just the regular population that's on conventional insurance or self-pay. Is that correct?
Yeah. So because this is something that came out of the Recovery Act, it was a federal program, and obviously the carrots and the sticks available to the federal government are through the programs that it supports, and Medicare and Medicaid being the two major programs. There also was some additional activity with other organizations within the federal government that serve patients, so the Department of Defense, the Veterans Affairs, the Indian Health Service, all of which have been working towards meaningful use as well. They just don't have access to those incentives. But what happens, of course, is when some of the largest purchasers in the country, largest payers in the country, Medicare and Medicaid, start doing something, it means that, of course, if you're developing electronic health records for those patients, of course, you're going to be using them across your whole practice. So it does provide benefit to the rest of the patient population.
And the insurance companies could also use this as an incentive also and say, look, we're going to renegotiate if you're not using these electronic health records, couldn't they?
That's true. And in fact, when I was at the Department of Health and Human Services, we actually worked with private payers to ensure that there was some coordination between the public and the private sector. So we worked with a number of large health plans and other private sector organizations in trying to encourage their incentive structures to support meaningful use of EHRs as well.
Right. It's kind of like you were talking about Kaiser Permanente having a lot of their visitations in Spanish and everything. Well, they've got probably a higher percentage of Hispanic patients on their insurance rolls than a lot of these other companies, don't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly, Kaiser Permanente has a very large presence in California, and so there's a very large Latino population there, and so that obviously is part of how they feel they're going to meet the needs of their population. But frankly, there are, providers are all around the country now who are making use of that kind of technology. So one of the things that also was encouraged was that in addition to sort of core electronic health record vendors, there are other companies and organizations that have developed to provide what you might call EHR modules. That is, that they can get certified for a specific part of the meaningful use criteria. So, for example, that concept of patient-specific education resources. There are small healthcare content providers that also have technology solutions that have been certified just for that one piece. And so a place like Kaiser Permanente licenses its content, both in English and Spanish, from a third party, and that information is brought into the information that's provided to their patients. So the idea was actually not just to spur these large electronic health record vendors, but also a whole series of additional technology and content solutions that can be layered on top of it.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, I noticed that I saw a comment the other day that there was someone who was going home from the hospital with a certain kind of injury, and it said, don't take ibuprofen in any form. And the patient questioned it, and it turned out it was something that was brought out from the kind of information bank, if you will, in the computer that said that in this particular case, because of this person's characteristics, not only of the injury, but also of in their health record, that the dangers of the of ibuprofen in this particular case would outweigh the benefits. So, you know, it's really interesting that things like that could be brought forward even if the doctor forgets to say it, as a reminder to the doctor as well as the patient that this would be a good piece of advice for this person to take home. So to what extent is that kind of data processing beginning to happen in the EHRs?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another piece. I was sort of focused on those specific elements that are of meaningful use that are related to, you know, the patient's use of information. But also there are, of course, many other things in meaningful use that relate to how providers use the systems and ultimately, as you say, how they help to provide appropriate guidance to their patients. So indirectly, very important to patient and family engagement. One of those things is called clinical decision support, or CDS systems. These CDS systems basically help to do things just like what you were talking about. So they provide information on either drug-drug interactions or drugs that you should not be on because of a particular condition. So if you have, a liver function issue or something like that, and you should not be on a particular drug, like ibuprofen, you would have information that the EHR would sort of flag that and sort of put that note into the information that the doctor is looking at and or that is sent to the patient. And that, of course, is really important, particularly for people who are on many many drugs, and people who have a lot of health issues certainly have to deal with that multi-drug management challenge. And mm-hmm. it's really important that all that information be put together, because it's not just that, first of all, it's hard for any clinician to keep track of all of the interactions and all the things to be concerned about. But even beyond that, you know, there may be a situation where, you know, you go to, you know, one doctor in the practice and they're prescribing a drug for something, and then you have a new diagnosis that's diagnosed by another provider in the practice, and you want to make sure that that information is considered in the overall treatment plan.
Right, just to flag those things is very helpful to the doctor too, because especially in these days of, you know, 12 minutes per patient or something, that the doctor can't always have the time or the freedom to think to look for all those variables. And we're all pretty complex beings, and we all have our uniquenesses, and it's really nice to have some bit of computer support for reminders for the patient as well as for the physician of these kinds of uniquenesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're down to the last 5 minutes, and I wanted to sort of bring out and give you an opportunity to bring up things you particularly wanted people to know about. And I think one of the other major concerns that I've heard is that people are worried about security of this information. If I put this information out there, there have been so many dangers about maybe my employer will misuse it, or maybe my insurance company will misuse it, and you know, and how much is the hacker likely to break into it? So, could you speak to those kinds of security concerns?
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely you know, a ground starting point, that, you know, nobody's going to be comfortable using this information, sharing this information, if they don't believe that it is secure. You know, of course, we sometimes operated under a false sense of security with our paper records, where there were really no safeguards, and you know, people would never even know if someone were you know, being able to look at charts and so forth. One of the things that's important in the future, beyond having you know, and there are some explicit expectations around the privacy and security of information, conducting security audits and things of that nature that are part of meaningful use, those are layered on top of existing requirements that a different part of the Department of Health and Human Services, the Office of Civil Rights at HHS, is responsible for enforcing. And that enforcement has really been beefed up over the last 5 years as the use of EHRs has intensified, to ensure that those issues are carefully monitored. But I think what's also important is that, you know, when you survey patients, yes, they're very concerned about privacy and security, but people, particularly people who have serious health issues, understand that if they can't have an efficient access to information, and if they can't figure out efficient ways of communicating that information to their family members, to their other providers, that they're at a really big disadvantage in, you know, maximizing the effectiveness of their care. So as concerned as consumers are with privacy and security, they want secure approaches to the transfer of information.
Right, so you can share it effectively amongst all your providers, not only the ones you have at home, but what if you're on holiday or something like that? Mike, do you have a final question for Dr. Seidman?
Well, I'm very excited about this. I can remember as a child going into the doctor's office, and my medical records were on an index card. And, you know, and so was all the adults, not just kids, but the adults too. And so we've come a long way. And where do you see us going in the next couple of years on this, Josh?
Yeah, well, one of the really important areas is to make sure that we're coming up with effective and efficient ways of getting information that consumers are collecting outside of the four walls of their doctor's office or their hospital, and getting that into the record as well, because, you know, most people spend a lot more than 99% of their time, you know, in their houses, in their schools, in their workplaces, in their communities, and there's all kinds of other information, right? So, you know, I have a son with asthma. I want to make sure that we're able to communicate information about symptoms in some consistent way. Well, how do we get that patient-generated health data about symptoms, about daily life into the electronic health record? And I think that's where the next phase of meaningful use in stage three meaningful use needs to go.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful having you with us. And thanks, Mike, of course, for all your insights. And thanks, everybody, for being with us. And we hope that you'll be with us again next week, too. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.
Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Gotta get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Home Depot delivers on your terms. Just say when, where, and how. Get free delivery on over a million items. No membership required. Need it fast? Order in-stock items online and pick them up in as little as 2 hours. Or tell us when you'll be home and we'll bring your order to your front door. Today. Go from doing to done faster with the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Visit homedepot.com for details.